Hey everybody, welcome to CreateCast, the show about people who make good. I'm your host, Chase Kay. If you're new to the show, welcome. If you're not new, thanks for coming back. As always, make sure you visit us at createcastpod.com to hear about all of our incredible guests, find more episodes, some exclusive photos, and check out some other cool stuff. You can also find us in the iTunes store. Just go to iTunes and search CreateCast. In fact, if you're on your phone right now, just take 5 seconds to hit that little subscribe button. It is the best way that you can show us some love, show us some support, and then, you know, maybe leave a comment, drop us a line at createcastpod@gmail.com, and let us know how we're doing. Yes, I say this every time. I am a broken record, but today's guest is especially awesome. Crook Stewart is a really good family friend. It turns out that Crook went to the same high school as my mom, believe it or not, just a few years off, and so it's just, you know, one of those random connections, and it's always nice to know awesome people doing awesome things. It was a really, really fun time to have Crook on the show. Crook is a musician, and he's been a tour manager for Crosby, Stills, and Nash, Jackson Browne. He's been on the road with the Rolling Stones. Totally awesome. And he lives right down there in the Florida Panhandle, and he's also a big proponent for local music, you know, the Music Matters movement, you know, trying to get music and musicians more involved in the community and trying to sort of build a community around it. And also, Crook runs an awesome venue sort of out of his house called the Ghetto Palace. I was lucky enough to play there the last time. They have sort of these, you know, jam nights, and, you know, local musicians from of all stripes get together and play. And it's just a really incredible community, and sort of how a music community should be, just really supportive and really positive in every way. So again, a huge thanks to Crook for coming on the show. In this interview, we talk about, you know, his life on the road, his time as a musician, how he first started playing music. You know what? It's a fun interview, and I'm excited for you to hear it. Again, make sure you visit us at createcastpod.com and drop us a line, let us know how we're doing, and show us some love. So without any further ado, here's this week's episode with Crook Stewart. All right, hey everybody here. I'm here with Crook Stewart, and he is the owner-operator of the Ghetto Palace. He's also been on the road with some incredible acts. I mean, everyone from the Rolling Stones to Crosby, Stills, and Nash, and that's actually where I kind of want to start is you've done so many things. You wear a lot of different hats, obviously. So when somebody asks you, hey, Crook, what do? What do you tell them?
These days, I tell them I'm a tour manager. But in the past, I've done just about every aspect of the music business. I was a rigger, the head rigger in Atlanta for a few years. I've done sound, I've done lighting, stage hands. So I feel like I'm kind of well-rounded. And I think that's important to cross-train.
Yeah, so I mean, maybe for the uninitiated, what exactly would a tour manager do?
Oh my gosh, well, your show's not that long, but basically I take over when the agency and management have booked the gigs. They shoot an email to me. If sometimes in the process, if there's a question about, you know, can we do an overnight from point A to point B this many miles and still set up and play a show, you know, I will get involved in that. But normally, they've got it down now. So they send that to me, and then I start doing the routing, which is deciding when we'll travel, where we'll spend the night, et cetera, et cetera. And I interface with the travel agency, get flights booked, book hotels, book tour buses. And I have a counterpart that's a production manager. He deals with pretty much everything related to equipment. So he gets all the equipment from point A to point B, and he's responsible for supervising the crew. So he'll be at the venue all day until, you know, the first truck door gets cracked and the last one closes at night. I'm fortunate that I get to hang out at the hotel with the band until about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and then we go to sound check.
That's incredible. I mean, even then, though, it sounds like really just a 24/7 job trying to keep track of everything. I mean, that sort of sounds also that you maybe had to grow into that position.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, so where did you start, you know, going on the road, and what were some of your first experiences?
Well, I started playing in a band, you know, in the Panama City area. And when I turned 18, I started my community college. The music program wasn't really up to the standards that I was hoping. So everyone in the band was older than I was, so they said, you know, we got an opportunity to tour, and I was like, sign me up. And so I didn't realize that that was, you know, going to lay the groundwork for what I do now. But I learned a ton of that over that 10-year period, because after that original band from Panama City broke up, I put together two more bands, and I ran the bands.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, so I built the sound systems and the lighting systems and stuff. So I didn't realize at the time, but that was all kind of laying the groundwork for what I do now.
So, I mean, when you were playing in those first bands, did you come from a musical family, or was this sort of, were you the dark horse?
And, you know, my dad was in the Bay High Band, but I wouldn't say that I had a musical family at all. But I did have an interest in music. And a friend of mine, I actually was playing bass guitar at the time, and a friend of mine's brother owned the drum set that we were using in the band, and he was going to move away. And so I was in the sixth grade, going into seventh, going to start playing in the band at junior high school. And so I taught my parents into buying me a drum set so we could keep the band together. And because we paid for them, they resided at our house. And I guess I just started gravitating towards the drums and ended up, you know, playing the drums in my later years.
Maybe what were some of the, you know, musical influences that you had during that time?
Oh, gosh.
I know, it's a hard question.
Know, Led
there's always so much, yeah.
And the Beatles, and any, you know, all that stuff in the late 60s, early 70s, you know, was me. Crosby, Stills, and Nash, you know, Jackson Brown.
So, I mean, obviously, as you started, you know, I mentioned you worked with Crosby, Stills, and Nash, and you still work with them.
Right.
I mean, that's got to be kind of cool for you, right?
I mean, it is definitely. You know, I mean, I can remember practicing to the Crosby, Stills, and Nash record upstairs at my mom's house, you know, when I was a kid. So fast forward many, many years later, you know, it's incredible that I'm working with them now, you know.
So I guess, you know, this sort of just, you know, brings me to what else you've been doing as far as, you know, everything with your music now, and how obviously you still go on the road a lot. But then
Absolutely.
You're also trying to do a lot here just locally in Panama City, and I think it's so interesting. I think maybe someone wouldn't expect someone who's as storied and as, you know, worldly as you, you know, to come from a smaller town, and it's kind of cool. So what about maybe Panama City sort of do you see music-wise, and what maybe sort of makes it feel like home?
Well, you know, it's a little bit of paradise here, you know. A lot of people come down here for the summer and stuff like that. But I think a lot of people like that are stationed at the Air Force Base here, the Navy Base, you know, they may come through on a stint, you know, their 4 years or whatever and leave. But a lot of them end up returning, you know, so it's a great area to be from. And my issue was because when I was 18, I basically didn't return until almost, you know, 30 years later. Mm-hmm. I found that the music scene that was here when I was a kid had almost disappeared. You know, mm-hmm. they still kind of some places at the beach that were iron musicians and bands and, you know, one or two places downtown, but there wasn't a real music scene. And that was kind of like, I thought for a while, that I was going to have to go somewhere else. And a friend of mine, you know, I told him, I was like, well, I'm thinking about moving to Nashville, you know, so mm-hmm. there's a music scene. And the guy's like, if you want one, make one. And so that was kind of the catalyst that got me started thinking about having a place that musicians could get together and play anytime, you know. And so I started looking at real estate here and found this place that we affectionately call the Ghetto Palace. It's not in the greatest area of town, but it's the perfect building for what we do. And so we try to host a jam once a month when I'm not on the road and invite all of our musician friends in town. And to that end, we've learned that there's tons and tons of great musicians in this area, and there weren't enough places for them to play. So we happened to be visiting Nashville one time, and my wife Vicki and I talked about how great it would be to have something like that in our downtown area, you know, where you could go from club to club, bar to bar, restaurant to restaurant, and hear bands. And so we put our heads together and had a couple of meetings that even the mayor and a few of the commissioners attended, and we basically decided we would try and make the bar so low, or the cost of entry to host live entertainment, that you wouldn't have a reason to say no. Mm. And so the city kicked in a little bit. The Community Redevelopment Agency pledged 80% of their first years of the performing rights organizations' fees, et cetera, et cetera. Musicians said they would play for tips. And so for about the first month and a half, all the musicians were playing for tips. They were making great tips because one of the things that our graphic design person came up with was a great branding. And, you know, other people came up with the slogan, Tip the Talent. And it really, everybody took that to heart. And so now, you know, it's been over a year now, and things are going strong. These restaurants that decided to live entertainment, to add live entertainment, have now had the best nights that they've ever had due to the fact that they have live entertainment. So they all get it, you know, now. And so it's really been working out.
You know, what's so cool about that is, you know, obviously you found that there are musicians who are excited about it, but it also really strikes me that there are people who are interested, maybe not musicians, but are interested in a music scene that are now able to engage with it, whereas, you know, before they would have had to go to a Nashville or something to experience that.
Absolutely.
So it's really cool. And you know, obviously I'll throw up a picture on the website so people can see what this space looks like, because it really is incredible what you've been able to make here, and just the way that you've been able to engage the community. And, you know, I guess as you're looking at the community here and trying to sort of create that music scene, what are you maybe taking from your experiences elsewhere? What have you maybe, what are some of the other places that you've toured been? You know, what have they been like?
Well, I've pretty much toured the world at this point, because this is my 26th year of tour managing. So, you know, I've seen just about every corner of the world. And the one thing that I can say is music is such a driving force for everybody, it seems. You know, it's like, it's kind of the one thing that can pull people together and get them on the same page, no matter what their background is or ethnicity or anything. You know, we want to extend that to our downtown area and our area in general. I mean, we'd really love Panama City to be like Nashville South or Austin East.
I love that. You know, that's, I think you've mentioned that before, that whole Nashville South Austin
right.
East. That's awesome. It's a great little slogan. Trademark it.
Well, we haven't done that one, but we do have, we want, you know, Nashville is known as Music City USA. We want Panama City to be known as Panama City, or Music City FLA.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And so, again, this is, you know, just a really cool space and everything that you've been able to do. So I'm kind of curious, as, you know, looking towards the future, maybe what are you hoping to see this maybe grow into more? Like, what's next?
Well, we have a friend that we're trying to get some people to help back. And a lot of our schools are starting to cut out their music programs due to lack of funding and stuff. And I really get sick of seeing all the money that's poured into football and soccer and stuff like that. And I mean, I was embarrassed recently, I think about a year ago, I went to my old alma mater, Rutherford High School's their homecoming game, and the band that they fielded was pretty poor. Not many members, you know, just wasn't anything like it was when I went to school. And I think it's all due to the fact that, you know, they've cut funding. And, you know, so if they're not funding a band program at the junior high school, well, there's not going to be many students taking band at the high school level. So our friend, his name is Will Thompson. He is wanting to start an after school music program for all the youth in Bay County. And we're really behind that, because we do feel like it makes a huge difference. And we don't want to stop with just music. We want to, you know, do things in the arts as well, you know, because I think if I was going to say something was lacking about Panama City in the area, I think it's just a lack of culture, you know, and so now we're trying to turn that around, because, you know, it's already paradise in some ways. We'd like to complete the picture.
No, and you mentioned that, you know, you left when you were 18, and when you came back, there wasn't a music scene. Was there a music scene here, really, when you were younger, or was it
there? Kind of was. In fact, it was really funny. I didn't realize it until somebody pointed it out when they were here at one of our jams one night. But when I was a youngster, my parents, my dad and my grandfather, owned a fuel oil company called Two Crooks Incorporated. And they had a warehouse, and they let us set up and play there anytime we wanted to. So, you know, this is kind of like the number two.
The spiritual successor.
Yeah, it is, absolutely. Because, I mean, you know, we would always have kids over there, you know, playing music all the time. And there were tons of places to play at the beach and in town. So we're trying to kind of create a renaissance of that area and, you know, make it big again.
You know, with a lot of the people that I've talked to, there's, you know, obviously, I think with the arts or anything creative, there's sort of this glamour to it, and people think it's, oh, wow, that's so cool. But it's obviously a lot of hard work, too. So, I mean, maybe walk me through it. And I mean, I think I saw when you were promoting the most recent jam, the one that's happening tonight. I mean, you're going to be on tour for months at a time. And so, I mean, it's a lot of hard work. So maybe what are some things that people don't know about that side?
Well, you know, your sleep patterns are a little crazy because, you know, might get on a bus after a show, everybody's hyped up, you eat a little food, and you lay down. And then you get in, you know, anywhere from, you know, a couple hours to 12 hours later on the bus, and you... if it's a couple hours, you know, you've slept a little bit in your bunk, you get up, you get everybody checked into the hotel, and then you try to go back to sleep. My problem is if I get on my computer, you know, I'll start answering emails and 3 or 4 hours will have passed. And, you know, it's like then I get to lay down for maybe a couple hours. And then, you know, so and the same way with the crew guys. I mean, those guys go from if we're doing a back to back show, they don't even get a hotel. They pretty much finish loading out, drive straight to the next venue, sleep on the bus, get up, shower at the venue, and start their day over again.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah.
It sounds like just, a really sort of a difficult lifestyle, but obviously, you know, pretty exciting, right?
It is. It is, you know, to get to see music at the level that the artists that I work with play every night is a dream come true, you know?
Yeah. Well, and that's one of the things that struck me when you were out in Los Angeles and I was at the Crosby, Stills, Nash show. It was just the fact that, I mean, you can really see that, I mean, even, you know, decades after that album was released and, you know, they've had so much, you know, time and experience, and it's just seeing that level of musicianship and just that level of you know, artisanship on stage is really incredible. So I'm curious, you have to have like a couple just like great tour stories. Do you have any good ones that you can share with us?
None that I can tell.
Okay,
you know, in fact, I've even had to sign a couple of non-disclosure agreements. So, you know.
That's awesome. No, I think it's just so cool for people to sort of get a window into that world because it's so interesting, you know, and that's the other thing I've been seeing with the podcast is just, you know, there's this whole other side of, you know, creativity and what people do that maybe people don't expect or that just people aren't even aware of. And so,
well,
sort of
you know,
that little window in.
That's very true because, you know, when I grew up and I went on the road playing in a band and stuff, I had no idea at the time that this whole other side of the music business existed. You know, mm-hmm. I never gave it any thought. And then when I stopped playing music, I was living in the Atlanta area and started working on the road crew. Just doing all the big shows that came through Atlanta. In fact, the first one I ever did was the Jackson's Victory Tour at Atlanta Fulton County Stadium. And, you know, I educated myself very quickly on what everybody does out here, you know, and I was like, wow, you know, I never knew that it took that many people, that kind of staffing to pull one of these shows off, you know. So, I mean, when we go on the tour with Crosby, Stills, and Nash in the U.S., you know, we're using three trucks, five buses, and I have about 34 people on the road, and it's like, who knew?
Yeah,
I didn't.
Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, I guess that sort of makes me wonder, you've obviously had so much experience, if maybe just someone who wants to maybe start playing music or just get involved with music, I mean, would you have any advice for them?
Be passionate about it, you know. Make sure it's something that you really enjoy and almost something that you can't live without, because I think that will, in the long term, will bode well for you, because you really gotta have that drive and that stick-to-itiveness to keep it up, because it's not going to be a piece of cake normally, you know. You have to work for it.
Yeah, but it is a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
And so obviously I'm going to link to, you know, the Facebook page for the Ghetto Palace and stuff, but I mean, is there anything maybe coming up for that you want to let people know about?
Just go out and support live local music. Yeah. Live music of any kind, really.
And I'm curious to know, who are you heading out with soon?
David Crosby's getting ready to do a solo tour that starts in Texas next weekend, the Kerrville Folk Festival. And he goes for about a month, and I have about 3.5 days at home. And then we go out. Graham Nash is doing a solo tour that starts up in Vancouver Island, at a folk festival, and goes till about August the 24th, and something that's really exciting that's on the horizon is all of us are going to board the Queen Mary 2 on September the 4th and sail across to the UK.
Oh, wow.
And so we'll play three shows on the way across, and our current drummer with CSN was already committed to do some dates with David Gilmour from Pink Floyd.
Oh, wow.
So we're going to be using Russell Kunkel, who has always been one of my idols, played on, you know, Jackson's records and Linda Ronstadt. He was part of the section back then in the day, and so I'm looking forward to working with him.
Man, well, this has been a really cool conversation, and I really appreciate your time, so thanks
Absolutely.
For coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Once again, a huge thanks to Crook for coming on the show. He's a great guy, a great friend, and I'm really lucky to know him. He's doing some incredible things down in Florida and sort of just really encouraging this local music community. And it's really exciting. It's really, really exciting. And I can't wait until I can get down there again to play. So again, a huge thanks to Crook. And as always, make sure you visit us at createcastpod.com. Drop us a line and search for us in the iTunes store. Just one word, createcast. Leave us a review, rate, comment, subscribe. We really, really appreciate it. And you know what? The best way that you can sort of help us out is just tell one friend if you think they might enjoy this podcast. If they're anyone who's interested in anything, I'm pretty sure one of our awesome guests will fit their interests. It's really cool. I always appreciate it. And as always, make good.
Hi, this is Crook Stewart, and I'm reminding you to make good.